and welcome to TVABC's, where we have conversations about Canadian television before cameras, before cuts, before channels, and explore how the people behind your favorite shows are being creative. This week, TVA's Greg David talks with Sonia Bennett. Sonia starred in her first major film role in the Canadian feature film Punch. For her performance, she was awarded Best Actress by the Vancouver Film Critics Circle and received a Special Artistic Merit Award for Women in Film and Video. After the success of Punch, Sonia was cast in a series of lead roles on such shows as Cold Squad and Godivas, both of which earned her Leo and Gemini nominations. In 2010, Sonia decided to apply some of what she learned from 10 years making films in front of the camera to take up screenwriting. Her first screenplay, Christmas for Cats, was awarded an honorable mention in the Praxis Feature Film Screenplay Competition. Prego Land, Sonia's second attempt, was supported by Movie Central, Telefilm Canada, and was selected for the Telefilm CFC Comedy Exchange. Currently, Sonia can be seen on ABC's thriller drama Mistresses and is writing on CBC's Kim's Convenience, as well as her web series for Telesoptic, Sunny Hearts. We'll hear about all of that and more in Greg's conversation with Sonia Bennett.
What's the weather like out there in Vancouver? In Toronto, we're now getting snow and cold temperatures.
You know what? It's actually beautiful out right now, and it has been raining in Vancouver since the beginning of time.
Yes.
And the sun came out this morning, and everyone's mood just perked up. I've stopped checking the weather because it's been raining for so long here, but yeah. It's like a whole new world here today.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's, before we get into your most recent work, and for me, that's seeing your name as a writing credit on the most recent episode of Kim's Convenience on CBC. But before we get to that, I mean, looking at your IMDb page, there's a ton of stuff that you've been in that I've seen you in as far back as Cold Squad. And The Dead Zone, and Stargate Atlantis, and Godivas, which was a fantastic program.
It was.
Let's talk a little bit about you getting into the Canadian TV industry in the first place. How did that all happen? Did you kind of, were you brought up and wanting to be an actress?
Well, I did want to be an actress, really, since I was a little girl. And I went to theater school here in Vancouver, Studio 58, and I didn't particularly thrive there. You know, like I played a lot of, like, one production, I believe I played a barnyard animal.
Ooh.
It wasn't really looking that good for me. But, but my father, Guy Bennett, wrote a movie called Punch about a father and daughter relationship. And I remember at the time I was in theater school playing barnyard animals, and he really wanted Lily Sobieski to play the daughter. And I remember him talking about this, and he had a big birthday party. It was probably, I was going to say 50th, but it was probably his 40th. And Stephen Hedges, one of the producers, was there, and I met him, and he said offhand to my dad, "Well, it's too bad your daughter's not an actress, because that'd be a really good hook. That'd take care of our publicity." And he went, "Oh, well, she is." And so began the process of me jumping through audition hoops to see if I were up to the task, and they decided I was. So that movie really, it let me start my career in a pretty cushy place. Someone at Fox Development headhunted me at the Toronto Film Fest from seeing the movie. So when I finished, I wasn't even done theater school at the time. So when I finished theater school, I was coming into auditions, you know, off of an American contract, which probably made me look more awesome than I felt.
Right.
Yes. And then from there, I got Cold Squad, which was, you know, one of my first gigs, my first television gig, as a lead in a series playing a detective at 21. So that was quite a trip.
What were your thoughts? If that was your first TV role, were you like, okay, I've made it. Like I've done a feature film with my dad, but here I am on TV already in my career. I've got it made. Was that the attitude you had?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, to be clear, my dream for myself was just to be able to act for a living. And I, you know, I had these ideas. I'm like, I don't care if I have to live off peanut butter sandwiches and live in a basement. If I could just do Shakespeare in a park, my life would be set. So right off the bat, my expectations for myself had been totally exceeded by 21. I was beyond thrilled to be on Cold Squad, and you know, I really had no right to be there. I was so green.
Right.
I was so green. I was 21 playing a detective. Mm-hmm. I was terrible. At the beginning, I think I learned, I mean, my learning curve was vertical on that show, I hope. And Peter Mitchell was there, and Gary Harvey, and I had so much support, Julie Stewart mentoring me. It was a fantastic, fantastic job. I learned so much right off the bat.
When you mentioned somebody like a Peter Mitchell, who's still in the industry and is now the showrunner at Murdoch Mysteries, mm-hmm. what's the type of thing that you learn from a guy like that? Just kind of how to carry yourself on a show? Is he teaching you acting and emoting and all of that? What did you learn from a guy like him?
I learned so much from Peter Mitchell. I remember I think he directed one of the first episodes I did, and I was so nervous and straight out of theater school and making everything really precious and doing my book work. And I did a take of something, and he came up to me and he was like, okay, that's good. Let's just try that again. Just this time, maybe turn down the suck. Okay. Let's go again.
Wow.
And you know, with a huge grin and a twinkle in his eye. But, you know, he made it fun, and he always understood what we were making TV, and, you know, we're not curing cancer here. Let's make this a fun, positive experience. There's nothing precious about him. I learned so much, and he's fun to have around, and he'd have to go write an entire episode that weekend, but there he would be smiling at midnight, you know, on set on Friday. He's a very, very good leader.
You know, growing up in Vancouver like you have, it really, the world's kind of your oyster when it comes to shows, especially the sci-fi and the fantasy genre shows. You know, you look at something like The Dead Zone that you were in. Mm-hmm. And so John Doe, did that film in Vancouver as well with Dominic Purcell?
Yep, that's right. That was also one of my very, very, very first gigs.
Whistler, of course, was out there, and Supernatural as well. Mm-hmm. So, do you like that kind of genre stuff? Do you like being part of that? Or are you open to basically anything at all?
I mean, I'm open to anything. I'll do anything. I mean,
right.
I've done a lot of Canadian film, and that's probably where I'm most comfortable.
Okay.
Just because it's all about the work and very little about the hair and the makeup and the prosthetics.
Right.
But I mean, it's all fun. I mean, actors just want to work, really.
Well, and the other interesting thing is you look at your IMDb page again, and it's such a wide variety, not only of genres, but of American and Canadian series as well. You've been exposed to both sides of the border when it comes to these productions. So what's the major difference that you see between an American production and a Canadian production, aside from the money and maybe the craft services might be better? Oh. Is there a major difference?
Well, you just nailed the main two.
Okay, that's what I kind of want to figure.
I mean, the American stuff, they just have more time, which, you know, there's pros and cons to. It's sure nice to be able to shoot 4 pages in a day instead of 11. Mm-hmm. You have the time for attention to detail, but as an actor with the Canadian stuff, I feel like it's more about performance, because you're not going to spend all that time making every tiny little lighting tweak that could be made, or it's way less coverage. So from an acting point of view, working on Canadian stuff can be really freeing and more fun, and I think sometimes produce higher quality work because it's it's got a stronger focus.
Okay. Yeah. And you feel like you've got less time to kind of nail it because you don't have as many takes as you might maybe in a US production where they can take more time to do things.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. It's about the work.
And then, like I said off the top, one of the fascinating things for me was seeing you write an episode of Kim's Convenience. Now, of course, we'll talk a little bit about Pregoland as well. But was there kind of a conscious decision where you wanted to move? You're still acting now, but was there kind of a conscious decision where you said, okay, I kind of want to go behind the camera and write and produce my own stuff? Was that a conscious thing for you, or did it just kind of happen organically?
Well, here's the thing. Sure. I'll tell you the truth here.
Okay.
Being an actress in my 30s has been less fun than being an actress in my 20s was. And, the roles started drying up and the ones that were available to me became less and less interesting and juicy, and I could feel myself I could feel a bitterness starting to creep in. And I didn't want to be that person. I didn't want to be that person. So I stopped acting. I had my son was one at the time. And I decided to stop acting, and I wasn't going to go back until I could find the joy in it as I'd had before.
Okay. Yeah.
I went back to school. I went to UBC. I just started studying all different things, which immediately made me in a better mood because I just felt the world seemed bigger. I went, I could do something else and be happy, because I feel like in this industry, it becomes so all-consuming and feels so important. And even just going to university there's more. There's more out there.
Okay.
In that time I started to write, and I decided that I was going to solve my problems by writing myself the acting role that I could not book in a traditional way. I was going to design my own fate. So I really wrote Pregoland, to be a vehicle for myself and to give my career some juice and launch it and, maybe help get me over a speed bump. And that plan failed. It did not work. But the beautiful thing is I completely fell in love with the writing process along the way. And so my problem was still solved, just not in the way that I thought it would be. And writing brings me so much joy, and it makes me so happy. And I'm a nerd, so to be able to get up every day and work, whether I have an audition or not, is really healthy for me. And then I just decided this was it. I'm going to write. I'm going to write, and I'm going to write every day, no matter what.
What were you taking at UBC, if you don't mind telling me?
I had this plan that I was going to be a child psychologist, which is hilarious because it would have taken me about 15 years to do. And then I realized, as my son got older, for one, that I don't actually like children that much. I thought I liked children, but I just wanted to have my own. And once I had my own, that went away.
Yeah.
And then I was like, maybe I'll just be a therapist. I'm like, maybe I should just play one on TV. Maybe that's a better idea. Because I also don't really care about other people's problems that much. But I was taking an English course and I just wanted to write my essays. All I wanted to do was write. So I wasn't taking anything in the industry, but it was clear already there. I didn't want to do my statistics. I didn't want to take my psychology. I wanted to do my elective, which was my English course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, before we get into some deep stuff, because, you know, you talking about roles and not having roles, like the roles for you had kind of dried up. Let's have a little bit of fun. Mm-hmm. One of the things that Anthony Marco and I do is bi-weekly, we do a podcast where we talk about the latest news in the Canadian TV industry. And he's in Hamilton and I'm in Toronto, and it's usually around 9 o'clock at night. So we're usually enjoying an adult beverage of some kind. Just to let people know, it's noon your time when we're recording in Vancouver, and 3 o'clock, just, you know, 20 after three here in Toronto for me. So I'm actually not drinking an alcoholic beverage yet. And I'm assuming you're not either.
I'm not. Okay. I kind of wish I was.
Yeah, I bet. After hearing some of my lame questions, I bet you are.
No, it just might be a more lively interview, but it's a little bit early. Just okay. A touch. Maybe if I was on East Coast time. Right. I don't actually, you know what? I can't pick my son up from school drunk. I don't want to be drunk mom.
No. There's enough of those out there. We don't need another one.
No.
So if we were recording this at night, is there an alcoholic beverage that you would be enjoying? And if not, that's fine. If you prefer tea or juice or something, that's fine.
But I do not prefer tea or juice at 9 o'clock at night.
Go for it.
I probably shouldn't admit this, but in my fridge, taking up an awful lot of space, is a box of white wine.
Ooh.
I buy wine by the box. It's that's just the truth. I'm gonna lay it out there.
Sure.
Yes, wine is my drink of choice.
And you have a lot of great wines available. So is it a local wine that you're getting?
I don't know. It's a box.
It's a box.
It's not special. But the good thing about boxes of wine is, unlike a bottle, you can't see how much damage you've done.
Yes.
What I enjoy about a box of wine. You just don't know. You can't see through it. Who knows what happened? I don't know.
I hope it's up on a high shelf in the fridge so that your son can't get at it.
It is at the top shelf. When my son had, like, I don't know, less than 25 words, I was drinking wine and he pointed to it and said, "Mama juice. Mama juice." I was like,
yes.
Pretty much nailed that, kid.
Wow. Smart. You've got a gifted boy. Good for you.
Yep.
Okay. Excellent. Well, me, I didn't say what I prefer.
Oh, yes. I'm so sorry. I'm
no,
no.
Greg, that's
what
okay.
would you be drinking?
Thanks for asking. I've been on this cider kick.
Ooh.
And I just can't seem to get enough of it. I mean, when I drink, well, I can. I know when to stop. I don't have a problem yet. But I just find it, I find it more refreshing than beer and a lot lighter than beer.
Mm. I enjoy cider.
Pardon me?
What kind of cider?
Oh, thank you for asking about that. It's actually, I've been trying out different ones, and there's a company here in Ontario called Pommies Cider, and they make it locally about an hour north of Toronto in the kind of Orangeville area. It's called the Caledon Hills. And I quite like a couple of the ones that they have. And then there's another Toronto company that makes some dry cider and some sweet cider called Batch 501, I think it is. And they sell that. Now they're selling it at the Rogers Center. So if you're at a Jays game, you can have it there. So I just think that it's nice and light and refreshing.
I have another question for you.
Yes.
Do you have shares in either of these companies?
No, but I must confess that when I did mention Pommies on Facebook that it was my drink of choice during the podcast, they did send me a case of it.
Okay, because it did sound a bit like an endorsement there.
It did.
Just a tad.
Now, do you want to run to the fridge and see what brand of wine you're drinking in case the company would like to send you a box?
No, I'm not going to do that.
Okay.
I'm going to just keep things real here on this end.
Okay. All right. So one of the things that you had said, the reason that you kind of segued into writing was mm-hmm. that the roles had dried up, the roles mm-hmm. that you liked had dried up that excited you. That, for, because you already said it, a 30s age actress, that's kind of stunning to me because 30-year-old women still party. It's not like they all just suddenly have kids and stop going outside. So that's indicating to me that they're just the writers in this country and in the States have just stopped writing. They think that after 29 years of age, there's just nothing going on with women. So is that the indication that you've pretty much gotten?
Well, it's partially that.
Yeah.
But also, you know, to be fair, this was a time, you know, I'm 37 now. So mm-hmm. this was at a time where there was just, you know, with the writer's strike, all those things were affecting things and everyone was sort of doing things one step down.
Okay.
And movie stars were doing television and the size and of role that I would normally get, I just didn't have a star name and, mm-hmm. and I wasn't getting them anymore. So part mm-hmm. of it was just that, like things that I would go, I got a good shot at this. And, you know, it's going to an American who's been on a hit American series. So part of it was just the state of the industry at that time as well. There was just less. It was so bountiful when I was in my early to mid-20s.
Do you think things have changed? Are things better now than they used to be?
It's hard for me to answer that question because I act much, much less
yeah.
now. I audition very little because yep. I'm largely focused on writing. But mm-hmm. I think the quality of the roles is getting better and better. It's very busy in Vancouver right now, but mm-hmm. Most, I think, of that busyness is, you know, American productions that are here that yeah. cast most of the big, again, generalizing, but most of the big juicy stuff is already cast when they come up here. They're yeah. still good. Yeah.
Yeah. Like you're kind of a guest of the week on Once Upon a Time yes. or Arrow or The Flash, right?
You got it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Then what are your thoughts about the whole point system? And going down from 8 points out of 10 to 6 points out of 10, does that just kind of strike fear into your heart and make things even worse?
Yeah, it makes me scared and it makes mm-hmm. me sad. You know, for somebody like me, I'm still, you know, I'm a new writer. I'm still an emerging writer. I'm at the beginning of my career. And you know, the dreams I have of, you know, having a show I created on the air just feels slimmer and slimmer. And maybe if I were 21, it would be, you know, getting that green card and going down to the States. But, you know, I have a family and a home here. It still might be something I do, but logistically, those big moves and life changes are more challenging. I wrote my MP, Jenny Kwan, she wrote back. And I'll just keep fighting the fight, but yeah, it's scary for sure.
It's weird because I just don't know what's going to happen. There's just so much unknown about it. I mean, there was the initial backlash and mm-hmm. shock when the news came down. And things seem to have quieted down, I guess mainly because everyone's kind of in a holding pattern and really aren't sure what's going to happen next, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll see. I just, you know, I get up every day and I do my thing regardless. We'll just take this one step at a time. But it was some dark days here in this household. You know, my husband's is an actor as well. So it's really affecting our whole household on every front. But we'll see.
Okay, so let's talk about writing. You've already mentioned Pregoland, and like I said off the top, I first saw your name in Kim's Convenience, and congratulations on that gig. How did you end up on Kim's Convenience and working with Inns Choi and Kevin White?
Well, like I said, after Pregoland, I made the decision that I was going to try to reinvent myself.
Yeah.
And I loved making Pregoland. It was a literal dream come true. But I could not make a living off of writing Canadian features.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to try to get into television. So gave myself a self-education and wrote a half-hour pilot. And I have a literary agent. And it was very hard to even get an interview. And he had said, you know, they're turning Kim's Convenience into a television show. It's in Toronto, though. Would this be something that you're interested in? And I was familiar with the play.
Yeah.
Immediately purchased it on Amazon, read it again. I was very, very passionate about the play, very excited about the project. Said, you know, talk to my family. They're like, yep, go. And just waited for an interview and waited for an interview. Finally said, screw this. I can't wait. Because they're not going to know who I am. Wrote a letter to Kevin and Inns. Basically expressing my passion for the project and saying, like, what do I know about the Korean immigrant experience? Absolutely nothing.
Right.
But here are all the things in the play, all the themes that I do resonate with and do know something about. And so desperate to get this letter in time, I overheard they were already doing interviews and went on to IMDb. I shouldn't even be admitting this. It's so crazy town. Went on to IMDb, looked at Kevin White's credits to see if I knew anybody he'd worked with. The very first gig I ever had was a commercial for Sunkissed Orange Pop. And Fred Ewenick was in it.
Oh.
Which was many years ago.
Yeah.
I was like, do I have his contact info? I didn't. Followed him on Twitter to see if he'd follow me back. He did follow me back.
Oh my
gosh. And then direct messaged him and said, I know this is crazy and I haven't spoken to you in a decade. Would you be willing, please feel free to say no, to forward this letter I've written to Kevin White? And he said, absolutely. And he sent it and he read my sample and then started the interview process. So I hustled hard. But am I ever glad I did. It was just an incredible experience. It's such a great first experience to have.
Man, only in Canada are people helping each other out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean,
Fred didn't have to follow you.
He did not.
He could have blocked you.
He also didn't have to pass my letter on.
Exactly.
And I said, you know, I know you haven't read anything that I've written, don't feel like you have to. And he was like, of course I'll pass it on.
That's amazing.
Send it over. And Kevin read my letter and then read my sample. And then, you know, certainly not for lack of helpful people. I've been pulled up over and over and over again in this industry.
So you're in the writer's room. Kevin was in there. Inns was in there. A former high school friend of mine, Anita Capilla, was in the room.
I love Anita. I've learned so much from that woman.
Okay. So what have you learned? What have you learned from her and from some of the other writers in that room?
Okay. Well, Anita in particular, in my limited experience as a writer, I feel like some of the things that she's best at are the things that other writers aren't, the not fun stuff. She's so good with structure of, you know, the equations of it, the not sexy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I really learned from her the asset, the value of thinking of that stuff first. It's easy to get taken away on, you know, emotional tangents, but her diligence with structure and framing. And I was just asking her one day, like, going, how does your brain work like that? And as usual, people are always very generous with their knowledge and their insights, I find.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, okay, I ask myself a series of questions. and I don't remember them off the top of my head, but, you know, going, whose story is this? And, you know, the series of questions starting from the top, and ask yourself these, and ask yourself these all the time. And at the beginning, and I wrote all her questions on post-it notes and taped them to my laptop. Actually, they just, I had to take them off because they had basically disintegrated last month, but I should retape them on again. And for someone like me who's not formally trained as a writer, that was invaluable to me.
What did you learn about yourself as a writer? What are your strengths at this point in your career when it comes to writing?
Well, I mean, I'm an actor first, so character is obviously a natural place for me to start. So I'd say that's one of my biggest strengths. And I like to play. I think I'm good at with tone, of walking the lines with tone, and well, I don't know if I'm good at it. It's just something I'm interested in, and that I really enjoy as a writer, is seeing how far you can swing with tones within still being in the world. And just learning, getting that structure in my bones. That's where I'm at right now. That's what I'm still have to always keep conscious about, is the frame and the structure.
One of the things that you said that was interesting to me is the, yes, you're not Korean Canadian. If anybody goes to IMDb or your website, they can see that right off the bat. But what is it that connected? What, you know, when you were pitching to Kevin, what were some of those kind of milestones or those touch points you said, here, I get this? Was it the whole family angle that, you know, kind of everybody can relate to?
Sure. You know, that it is about a family, and I understand, I mean, everyone, I think, to some degree has a dysfunctional family, but I understand a lot of these themes haven't been brought up in the show yet, but I don't know if you've read or seen the play.
Yes, I have.
Yeah. But to me, it's about legacy and reconciliation. And, you know, as a parent myself, I connect with, you know, as a daughter and a mother, wanting your children to have more than you had and do better than you did. That kind of stuff. And I think that that's what's really special about the show, is I think it's resonating to people, because it really is universal while being very specific.
The cast on Kim's Convenience is fantastic. I mean, no surprise about Paul and Jean, because they were in the play, but Andrea, I had never seen her in anything. Simu, I knew from Blood and Water, but Andrew, I mean, man, Andrew really knocks it out of the park.
He's
on a regular basis as Kimchi.
Hilarious. He's so funny.
Man.
He's killing it.
Yeah. So, you know, it's one thing to be an actress and see your name on the big screen or television as a performer. What's it like seeing your name on the screen as a writer? Does that give you a little extra thrill?
Oh, yeah. It's when I was writing Pregoland, what was one of the things that was sort of hard, you receive so much attention as an actor. Mm-hmm. And writing's harder.
Yeah.
And it takes, you know, it took me 3 years to write Pregoland. We shot the thing in 3.5 weeks. But all anyone wants to talk about is the performance.
Yeah.
I'm just going, wow, I have been overvalued my whole career until now, because this is hard.
Yeah.
So, you know, those writing credits I have, they mean more. Mm-hmm. I hope that's okay to say. They mean more than my acting credits. There's, you know, as an actor, there's still a little bit of, you know, bullshit, 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 my line, bullshit, mm-hmm. bullshit, bullshit, my line.
Yeah.
And with the writing, it's just blood, sweat, and tears into that whole world. And I feel more ownership. Yeah.
What type of writer are you? Are you the type that can write in a coffee shop with people milling around, or do you need a quiet room somewhere? How does it work for you?
Well, I do work in coffee shops, yeah. And I don't really have a choice. So that I can do that, and that is what I do.
Okay.
But maybe one day I will have my own office, and I will find that I can write even better and more and longer, but I don't know the answer to that yet.
Okay.
For now, I have a tab at my coffee shop across the street, if that's any indication of how much time I spend.
Very. Wow. Okay. And then do you put in a set of headphones and have some kind of writing playlist going, or is it just the cacophony of people in the background?
It's just the cacophony of people in the background.
Wow. Good for you.
Yeah, well, we'll see.
And are you able to do you set aside 2 hours or 3 hours or 4 hours, or is it like half an hour blocks?
I try to write for 4 hours a day. And it doesn't always happen. Sometimes life gets in the way.
Sure.
But I try to, as a minimum, write for 4 hours a day. And if auditions come up or whatever, it can all go out the window sometimes. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I drop the kids off at school, mm-hmm. and I go to the coffee shop and write until my daughter has to be picked up from preschool, and then usually try to find a few hours in the evening as well. And yeah, just keep moving forward.
Good for you. Okay, so a couple more questions before we wrap up. Mm-hmm. And I gave you a heads up about this one. I grew up in the 80s, in the 70s and 80s, watching TV. So I was watching shows mm-hmm. like The Hardy Boys. There was a little bit of The Beachcombers in there. And then when it was the 80s, it was all the A-Team and Magnum P.I. Oh, The Love Boat was in there. When I got a little bit more mature, it was Dallas and The Young and the Restless, because my mom was watching that.
Nice.
What about you? What did you grow up watching?
Okay. I know this is going to sound kind of crazy, but I didn't grow up with television. We had a TV and a VCR to rent movies, but we didn't have a TV. They always tease me in the writer's room because I've never have heard of or seen any of the references. But at one place we lived, we had like the rabbit ears. And mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm exaggerating. I hope I'm not so old. I'm like, when I was in my day, but I remember there was rabbit ears, and we did get CBC.
Okay.
With the rabbit ears. Does that make sense?
What I'm saying? Yeah, for sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Am I making this up?
No.
Are my parents doing something illegal?
No. CBC is one of those stations you can pick up with just with an antenna nowadays. It's still the same.
Yeah. And I seem to remember like how good the picture was dependent on the weather. And I also remember a Coke can being involved. Does that make any sense to you?
Sure, because the weather would affect the frequency, the transmission. That's why you would bend the rabbit ears to and fro and twist them certain ways, because you'd be able to pick up a better frequency. Yeah. So the pop can would certainly, especially if it was an Orange Crush, it would definitely, that definitely makes sense.
Nice plug for Orange
Thanks.
Crush. Yeah, I like that. Yes, so we did have CBC, and I feel like that's it. But my favorite show growing up was Road to Avonlea. I loved Road to Avonlea. And I got to work with Sarah Polley, and I just about passed out. I was so pumped up. I just loved that show. And my mom loved the show. We all watched that show. So I like the shows you named, I haven't seen any of them.
You know what? You are not the first person that I've spoken to in this industry that did not watch TV growing up.
I feel like it is not helpful, because sometimes I think I have really great ideas. Well, what's good about it is I'm not censored,
because
I never know that I'm stealing from other people.
Exactly.
So, right. So the things run, and then everyone's like, there's an exact episode of television from Friends. Ever heard of it? About that? But yes, I can come up with so many ideas, and for moments, until I run them by a human that actually lived on this earth, I think they're really really innovative.
Well, what are you watching now? I mean, with two kids, do your kids watch TV?
They watch TV. They like Peppa Pig,
sure,
and Kipper.
Yeah.
Which are great shows, mm-hmm, although usually I'm doing dishes when they're watching TV.
Right.
My husband and I right now are watching The Crown.
Oh, I have not watched that yet.
It's pretty epic.
Yes. It's on my Netflix list. There are so many other shows. Like, there's Kim's Convenience. There's Murdoch Mysteries. There's Frontier with this young upcoming actor named Jason Momoa. I'm not sure if you've heard of him.
I have just by hearing about this show.
Or this other young kid named Alan Hocko. He seems like he's going places.
Nice.
So I'm watching that, and I'm also watching a lot of documentaries. There's one on PBS right now called Soundscapes that's the history of American music. And it's really, really, if you're into music, make a note and check it out.
I'm writing it down.
You could probably watch it on the PBS site, but the Beatles' former manager, whose name escapes me right now, mm-hmm, Sir Something Martin. Yes, wow. He's a sir now.
Oh, I'm watching this for sure.
He's an executive producer. So they go right through from the kind of beginning days of music to how, you know, multiple tracks affected what you could do with regard to making music, and then, you know, how important the voice is and all of that kind of stuff. So if you're into music, it's a really good one.
It's noted. I'm going to add it to my giant list of things to watch.
That's the thing, you know, and that's not even touching my Netflix queue, which is full of stuff that I've liked. The thing about Netflix is, first of all, there needs to be more Canadian stuff on there, but there's so much great international stuff, like stuff from the Netherlands and from, mm-hmm, France and from Germany and Ireland that are just so good. And I'm so, you know, that's worth the already low price of $13 or whatever it is to get access to all of this great international stuff that we get to watch through Netflix.
Do you ever find, though, that I often am like, okay, it's the time. I'm done my writing. It's 9 o'clock. I got time for an hour to watch something before I go to bed. But I spend so long trying to pick what I'm going to watch,
yep,
and then I run out of time and I can't watch anything.
Yep. No, it's true. You throw stuff into your list and you think, well, I'm not really into any of that stuff. So you end up getting caught in that hell of going through all the different tastes. And, you know, if you like this, maybe you like this. And it can be really overwhelming.
Can't decide.
Yeah. Anybody that complains about Canadian Netflix, though, they need a punch in the arm, because you don't necessarily need Friday Night. You don't need to watch Friday Night Lights again. Although I would. We don't need all the American shows on there.
I don't. I'm not for lack of choices.
Yeah. Yeah.
No.
Okay. So let's wrap up. How many episodes of Kim's Convenience did you end up writing for season one?
I wrote one. Was guaranteed zero, and I got one, and man, was I ever happy.
Now, IMDb says that you're the story editor. Is that the case as well?
Yeah. So I was there when we arced out the whole.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then what else befalls the title of story editor?
Well, it's really weird. It doesn't feel very story editor-ish. It still seems like a weird title to me, but we spent... we just spent 2 months in the room together, all mm-hmm. together, mm-hmm. coming up with as many story ideas as we could and finding a shape to the season and finding all those stories. So, you know, I've had my hand in a little bit of every episode.
Yeah.
You know, we all work together and then take away the script that gets given to us and flesh it out further.
And what are you working on right now that you can talk about? Have you got stuff in development? Have you got 3 or 4 pilots on the go that you're writing? You're directing a short film? What's going on?
I got a few things going on. Well, I just finished shooting a movie as an actor, which was
okay. A
loads of fun. It was a kayaking movie. It's called Kayaking for Beginners right now. I think the title may change, but just spent 5 weeks up in a series of remote islands in BC, sort of like Little Miss Sunshine in kayaks.
Oh.
So that was incredible. Got to learn how to kayak and just kayak past humpback whales and made friends with sea lions. And
wait a minute. I thought that that was a prerequisite of living in Vancouver, is that you had to know, already had, knew how to kayak basically out of the womb. This isn't true?
I know. It's not true. It's not true. Sometimes I think when things are too easy, they don't seem special and you don't do them.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So I just finished that and just wrote a pilot, which I was in Toronto last week presenting to the world.
Okay.
And I have a web series that I created and wrote and starred in that's going to start airing next week called Sunny Hearts.
Oh, okay.
And yes, if you want to watch that, you can maybe that, because I don't know all the dates off the top of my head, you can go to Twitter and look up Sunny Hearts, and then it has a Twitter feed, and we'll be rolling out all the webisodes week by week, I think starting next week or the week after.
Okay. So how... you know, I talk to people like the girls involved with Second Gen or Jared Kiso with Letterkenny. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the fact that they wrote these projects for YouTube and then end up turning them around into television series that get picked up. So that's kind of, is that kind of what you're pursuing? Is, you know, the hope is putting something up online will help kind of get you in the door and get something like that into production, because you've, it's kind of a finished commodity that people can actually see.
You got it.
Yeah.
It was a show that I pitched a few years ago, and I hadn't written the pilot yet. And it's a comedy about a community center, essentially. Mm-hmm. And people said, you know, this is all about the style and tone. And for this type of show, show us something. Like, we'd rather see something than read something for something like this. And had a, you know, met with Prem Gill when she was working at TELUS. And like the thought of doing a web series had never even occurred to me. Like, it's just, I feel too old. But it was surprisingly easy to turn into a web series. And I really did figure out what the show would be, what the show is and isn't by making this web series. And now that I've done it, and it was so satisfying to make. Actually, Andrea Bang, who plays Janet on Kim's Convenience, is in it.
Okay.
Like, pre-Kim's Convenience. We shot it before Kim's Convenience.
Wow.
And, yes. So now I would be happy just to make more seasons of it as a web series as well. It's loads of fun.
And as a writer, it really teaches you how to tighten up and get rid of all the extra stuff, because you're writing for, you know, maybe 6 to 10 minutes as opposed to 22 minutes an episode, right?
Absolutely. In our case, you know, we're finding the more successful, you know, the 3 to 6 minute range. So really getting tight. I've learned so much doing it and had a blast.
Thanks to Sonia Bennett for sitting down this week with Greg David and having a chat with him about all the things that she's working on. You can listen to all the past episodes of TVA BCs by going to the TVA website and going to the podcast link and clicking on that, and you'll see every second week we have a news podcast that Greg and I kind of co-host together, and then every other week we usually talk to somebody who's either writing, acting, directing, show running, everything that you can imagine that's involved in the making of Canadian television. So if you'd like to go and check out all of those episodes, some of them are pretty current for shows that you probably watch on Canadian television, please be sure to do that. If you'd like to follow Greg, you can find him on Twitter at Greg_David. You can find the TVA website at TV_EH. You can find me on Twitter at Anthony Marco. And if you'd like to support us, please go to our Patreon site. It's patreon.com, patreon.com/TV_EH. And if you'd like to contribute $1 an episode or $1 a week or a couple of bucks a month, we would appreciate any donation that you can muster, especially in the winter months. Helps us keep the heat going in those server farms. And by all means, we will certainly appreciate it and hopefully mention you on an upcoming show as well. There may be a week or two over the next month or so where over the holidays you don't see an episode up there, but expect that we will be back in full force come January. And that wraps up another episode for this week. And now back to your regularly scheduled programming.